Blog Talk Radio.
Life, Growth, and Wellness.
Problems tonight, but hopefully you can hear me fine. And so I'm straight through the computer tonight, so that's a little different. The phone just had an issue with what it wanted to do, and we're not going to really worry about that. So thank you, and welcome for being Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. I am Sandy Rogers, your hostess for this evening, and I'm so thankful for joining in with us tonight. So once again, if may have a little problem hearing me because of the audio that we're having with the phones, but not to fear, we always anchor ourselves in a positive affirmation and trust that we're needed tonight, or at least I do. Centered and anchored. How appropriate is that? Today, I am centered and anchored in the love of God, the Creator, the Most High. Today, I celebrate my connection to the Spirit of all life. Today, I choose to be centered and anchored. I begin with prayer and meditation. I close out the very around me. I steal my in peace and calm. I am drenched in love and truth. I am centered and anchored. I joyously give a hearty shout. I allow the words of thanksgiving to flow freely from my mouth. I willingly open up my mouth to proclaim that it is all good all the time in my life. I desire for all those around me to feel my contagious joy. I am excited about living. I remain in an attitude throughout the entire day and in the evening. I look for ways to demonstrate my love, my joy, and my peace. I want to touch as many as possible with positive, encouraging thoughts and words today. An epidemic of love, happiness, peace, and unity. I choose to do this for my neighbors, my co-workers, strangers, my friends, and my loved ones. I want to be responsible for the quickest spreading infectious influence on the planet. I am centered and anchored this day. I freely share. I freely love without condition or restriction. I am centered and anchored today in God's abiding grace and mercy. I claim it as my rightful inheritance. I am thankful. I am centered and anchored. Again, that's from my daily inspirational blogs. And you can get those if you'd like to subscribe to wordpress.com. So, next thing that we do as we get prepared to open up for the show tonight is we invoke and invite the spirits and the energies on this show. And so we are very, very excited about having the ancestors guide us and love us and show us and lead us through the way they speak to us and all sorts of community of ways. And so we're very, very thankful that we have the ancestors. Oh, we have the ancestors. We love you dearly. It's all about life. It's all about love. It's all about wellness. So tonight's show is calling, yet helping others find their way. Our Kimberly Biggs, man, she is incredible. And you'll get a chance to meet her shortly. Again, we're having a few technical, but hopefully we'll get everything that there is not any type of a delay in having Kimberly on to talk to us. So I'm going to play a song right now and see if we can get this thing really moving in the direction. So here's a quick break, and I'll be right back with you. Wellness of Sandy Rogers Show. So I'm even doing something a little new. I'm broadcasting through the computer, and so I normally use my phone, but my call-in number wouldn't work for me tonight. So, but you know what? If you guys, I hope you can hear me well. I'm talking loud so that I'm my voice. So tonight's show is a holistic helping others find their way. So I met this young lady a few weeks ago, and we were and I started talking to her because I wanted to know what her story was. And she was so articulate with what she was doing, where she come from, and what her intentions were, what her goals were. She wanted to reach back into the community and help those individuals that came from the same place that she was. I'm going to bring Ms. Kimberly on, and we're going to be speaking with her her to tell us about, you know, what was that all about? What was that being homeless and a strong desire to help other people? So, audience, you know, you're always welcome to call in and be a part of the discussion. Our number here is 516-531-1. You would simply press 1 to let me know you want to talk with us. So as we get into tonight's show, Kimberly is over the BIG Empowerment Group, and that's for blessing individuals gratefully. And so she is showing up everywhere she goes, and God just shows out through her on her behalf, just making the way plain and gets to the place she needs. Oh, she is directed to what her next step is. Kimberly is just, I mean, she's sure-footed. She's a joy. She is such an incredible contributor to the well-being of other people. And she's had her own set of challenges, but let me tell you, she's not let any of that slow her down. She's doing what she has do, what she feels she's been called to do here on this earth. So that record that I just played by Sean, I'm Every Woman, that is such a descriptive record for Kimberly, because she's out there and she's supportive and she's helping everybody that she can. So Kimberly, are you online with us?
Yes, I'm here, Sandy. How are you tonight?
How are you?
I am great, great, great. It's a blessing to be on tonight.
Yeah, I'm so thankful that you had time yesterday. As I was to the audience, I believe that this connection is pretty good. I just don't normally have the cast it through the computer. As far as I can tell, everything is working fine. So would you tell us in your own words, give us a little, you know, like who you are, what you're doing, the contributions that you feel you've been called to share with the world?
Well, I don't know if we would even have enough time to go that far back, but I'm going to sum it up as best that I can. And again, it was a great, great pleasure to meet you, to even network with you, and just to get the message out, being a kingdom builder. And I just want to introduce to everyone, I'm Kimberly Biggs. I'm originally from Mississippi, born and raised there. Came from a single family home. I was later adopted, and growing up, you know, just the middle class rural families, where you're pretty much the whole neighborhood raised you. And I was always the one kind of set high on the bar. I was kind of peculiar, you know, different from the rest of the kids, where everybody was riding bicycles. I was inside scribbling, or in my mind, in my mental, you know, being great, you know, from the other kids. Didn't learn how to ride a bike until I was like 11. Didn't see a reason to ride a bicycle. But to make a long story short, I went through some things, molestation. I went through I was raped at the age of 14, had my oldest son on my 15th birthday, just angry inside, didn't understand, you know, what it was and why I was encountering so many things and, you know, having to fight the monsters to come out and silence some things and having things embedded inside of me. But I knew a long time that I had a call on my life. I just didn't know what. In the adversities, you know, knowing my biological mother, knowing my siblings, but being raised, you know, different in a different home. But always my friends came from two-parent homes, you know, the cheerleaders, the parents that had strict rules, you know, and I always admired that. I always said and looked back and said, you know, once I'm able to have my own family, you know, this is the kind of family seat that I want to have for my children, to give them opportunity to have both parents, to grow and to nurture them, and to never be away from them. And, well, of course, life throws the curveballs. And, you know, either you're going to catch them or you're going to get hit or you're going to duck and dodge them. And I excelled in high school, extremely brilliant person. God bless me to have so much intellect and so much energy, so many ideas, just a visionary. Not only do I envision, but I go after the provisions, the promises that he has given me to enhance his kingdom, to be a kingdom builder, to share the good news. But it was very ugly, Miss Sandy. I mean, to a point that I attempted suicide in high school when I found out that I was pregnant. I drank a bottle of turpentine, trying to get rid of the baby, not knowing how my adopted mother would feel. You know, she had me, she held me really, 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 really close. I can't really remember some of the things, the ugliness, because I blocked it out. I do remember being violated. I do remember her adopted me and my sister next to me. But then in the community aspect, you know, from people in the neighborhood, older men in the neighborhood, attacking you or pulling you away, tricking you, manipulating your mind to think, you know, it's okay, you know, you don't have to tell anyone, keeping all of those things bottled. Sometimes I would, you know, block some things from letting somebody get to my sister, you know, that was adopted with me as well, so that he wouldn't touch her or they wouldn't touch her, that they, you know, it would only be me. So I felt this greater strength that I was empowered to protect. I was empowered to make sure nothing happened. I was empowered to provide them with something that they never had, even my sisters and brothers from my mother. You know, after finishing, when I went through high school, I became very cocky, passed all with high marks. But I didn't take no crap, you know, joining a gang, but still set apart from everybody else because, you know, I was the one that they said now they call the word bougie. I was the one that I was hood, but I was bougie, you know. I was different, you know. I didn't hang out all night, you know. I didn't hang out all night, you know. I came home, but I had so many adversities. Like, they wouldn't let me be a cheerleader because I had a baby. You know, then right after I had my baby, everybody was cheerleaders who had babies. My parents, then my adopted parents, didn't believe in me going to school being pregnant. So I was brought out of school, homeschooled, and, you know, but then after I had my baby, then it's like everybody else, it was okay for them to go to school. But my principal, I just didn't understand. And when you understand who you are through Christ now, that I know who I am, I had to go through a lot of things to prepare me for the greater. And even with that, I finished high school. I went to college at Stillman College in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. There, you know, I started missing home, and I decided that I didn't want to finish school. I came back. I got married, and I began to raise my family. I got, after I had my second child, 1994 is when I was introduced to real estate. I started out as a loan officer for a friend that had a mortgage company, and I excelled. I liked it. I liked being able to verbally understand and get the message over to other people. I started working in the community with the elders who had FHA loans, who had been paying on those loans over 30 years, getting them restructured, getting them reorganized, became very active with the political aspects, supporting Democratic, working on Democratic campaigns, whether it be attorney general, whether it be congressmen or senators. I became very active. I became very active in NAACP. I just wanted to be around people who were successful. I wanted to be around people who would be a very positive, intellect, or, had so much to offer me. But at the same time, I was always still missing something. It's like no matter what I accomplished, no matter how informative I was, how aggressive I was, it was always that one thing that was missing or that was holding me back from within. And I was just very, very, very angry. And I thought that all the money that I could make, making sure that my children had in an abusive relationship, stayed in a relationship, it was no good. Stayed there, for over 20 years because I wanted my children to have a father and a mother to raise them. I thought that, once I said my vows, that was forever, come hell or high water, it was meant for me to support and, be a praying woman and all of those things. So at that point, when things were falling apart in my marriage, I began to think that I was cursed. I was like, I'm doing everything that I know how. I'm out here, I'm grinding, I'm making money, but he don't want me. I'm a beautiful woman. We got beautiful children. We built a $3.5 million home. I contracted every phase of the house. I contracted. I built the house out of pocket, $300,000. With just having the intellect of knowing how to build, studying building, got my contractor's license. I decided that I wanted to build my own real estate firm. And after building my house, and I built it in, again, rural Mississippi, and in a predominantly white neighborhood with upper-level, higher-class people in, and they didn't want me in. And I came through like a force, I had someone else to buy the property. She quit claiming the property to me, and I went up with my home. And after that, I ended up, that's when all hell broke loose. It's like I had access to everything that I needed. Financially, I was racking in. And I was being community-minded. I was making sure the children in my community at Christmas, the new shoes that they made, honor roll, principal list. I tried to, go through the community and reward those children, the teen mothers or mothers at risk or single mothers. If the lights was off when I got in from work or my children, I would ask the power people to stop by my house and pick up a check. I just wanted to be a powerful, powerful force to protect and to help other people excel. And I got around with a group of people, and like I said, the money wasn't an issue. They endorsed my business. They helped me excel, and business was good. And one mistake that I made was trusting people too much. And I made the mistake of forcing things that shouldn't have been. And, like people in the community who couldn't afford a house, I got involved with selling the ARM loans instead of fixed mortgages. And it landed me a indictment. It landed me time in prison. I lost my home. My marriage was already over, but I found strength to just, say, okay, God, if there is a God, I think I want to do something different. I feel like there is because I can remember being five and I can remember having these voices and these talks within myself and saying that you can't give up or try it again, and I didn't understand what that was on the inner man. And so once I got, you know, involved with the predatory lending and everything that went on, the people who held me up, one passed away and one was sent to prison for 60 years. I ended up with a 2-year sentence. And, you know, but of course, the people in my neighborhood, it's like it was a big, big, it was a big, big ordeal to see a young black girl who had it all. And, you know, she pretty much running the city with the connects. They wonder how she could do it and how did she even get the information to know what she know, you know. That was the thing for them, you know, where is she getting the information? But I studied, you know, I studied real hard, and I ended up actually losing custody of my children while I was in prison. I had a brother that got killed when I was in prison, and I saw your little excerpt that you went, but my mother passed away 2 weeks after I got out of prison. I ended up paroling out to my biological mother's house, and it was hell. My mother and I never really had what you call a mother-daughter relationship. We only had a mother-daughter relationship when I was giving, when I was able to provide her with a home or provide her with a nice, hefty lump of cash. You know, but I felt good about that because it was still my mother, and I wanted her to be comfortable. I wanted her to live comfortable, and I didn't want her to be without. Same for my sisters. But when I say I lost it all,
Kimberly,
I lost it all. Uh-huh.
Let me stop you for a moment because, I mean, I your story is incredible.
Yeah.
You overcome so much. Been abused as a child, being adopted, and what that could all be about, giving birth to a child at 15.
On my 15th birthday, actually. We shared the same birthday.
That's incredible. Right. And then you talked some about your issues with understanding of religion and how could possibly lead to some of your problems with your marriage as far as what your understanding was as far as your life. And also kind of spotlight and have you to address a little bit more about the business failure and how illegal as far as the loans, the predatory loans. But, you know, like a lot of these large banks and mortgage, basically the same thing, if I'm understanding you correctly. So I wanted to, just to have you to go back and touch on that again as to, you know, why. Out, so to speak, for that predatory. If you're doing so much in the community, you know, I understand now why people called you more a bougie hood rat. So,
yeah. Well, it's like this. You know, it gave me an opportunity to really understand the network of people. I didn't understand. It was the way that I was taught. The things that I was taught, I had never worked in banking and finance before. I was going to school for criminal justice, and going into real estate. You know, I always did debate things, but I mean, I just did what I was taught. You know what I'm saying? These guys, and you know, they were Caucasian people, but they saw my intellect. And I thought it was just an aspiration of helping me, you know, start my business, get my business afloat. But, you know, they had access to banks, you know, and so, you know, if I closed the deal, you know, how they would bag them in the deal. Well, after the guy that owned the company, after he passed away, it was only, you know, a few of us there. You know, the other guy that got 60 years and me. And because I never signed anything, you know, with my name, or because I had sense enough, I was like, you know, this can't be, it's not my business, or I'm not a closing agent, so I shouldn't be closing loans. But I was doing the whole nine. I was closing the loans, clearing the conditions, making sure that the loans were processed through everything that, you know, made sure that everything, and I was one of the highest bidders, highest paid brokers at that time. And I went, like I said, I was a movement by myself. And predatory lending, and when it came in, you know, they started investigating mortgage companies with so many people having ARM loans versus fixed mortgages. People started ballooning, you know, their mortgage rates started going up. And some people didn't come back in 2 years to refinance into a fixed mortgage. And when they started having a mortgage to go up every month, they didn't understand. So when investigators from, you know, the feds come in and they, you know, looking over all the files, contacting these people, you know, these people were, they were paying them actually to say, hey, what did she do? Or did you have a bank account here at the bank that you had the cashiers for your down payment, that type of thing. And it were people in the community that could never get a house. I had, you know, coached them, go to the churches and do workshops with pre- and post-purchase home buying seminars, you know, teaching them the ins and outs about before you even buy a house to get ready, getting a credit straight, and putting them in the houses. And these people actually wrote statements out to the Fed saying, well, you know, I didn't know that I was getting this kind of loan, you know, kind of like, you know, giving them $300 on the side. But I need you to have this statement saying that you didn't know anything about this loan. So I dealt with that. But I knew, Miss Sandy, that more came from it. It was more that, you know, here it is. You got a 10-bedroom home in this community that they didn't want you in. You know, here it is. You're driving Mercedeses and every other week a Jaguar. Your children driving the cars. We belong to a country club. I wanted my children to be able to have things that other kids had in the neighborhood, that they would have extracurricular activities that they didn't teach in my neighborhood where I'm from. You know, either you're going to sell drugs where I'm from, or you're going to be in a gang where I'm from, or you're going to just be, you know, doing something crazy, because that's all the opportunity that's there. You know, it's no opportunity at all. You know, you either do one.
And then here you come trying to have these big dreams and being educated and researching and learning and how they
and giving back and giving back
to put the brakes on you.
Yes, and it put a lot of. I thought that I could deal with it. I thought that I was big enough that it wouldn't bother me. But when I lost my home, you know, I tried to say, well, hey, you know, I'll do it again. I did it before. I'll do it again. You know, you got this cocky mentality. But it was the beginning. 2001 is when I got my indictment. No, 2007 is when I got indicted. And 2008 is when I lost everything. And from 2008 up until 2015, when I was released from prison, was like a pivotal point. You know, I was back and forth going to jail on the same charge, never had another charge, just this one charge. But when I tell you, I went through the picking, I went through the humiliation, you know, judges, chief of police's, you know, saying, you know, following me around, harassing me, okay, this nigga, I had it actually said, a letter brought to my home saying, this nigga, okay, we got her what we want her. You know, she don't have any more money. She had to pay all the money to get an attorney, which I could have gotten 10 years. I ended up with 2 because I had been so political, and I had some people in Congress and senators that were writing letters on my behalf, you know, from the Democratic Party, from the NAACP. And I just decided that, you know, I'm going to go through it, you know. And when I accepted, you know, to stop fighting with them and going back and forth in court and, you know, all of that, I just said, okay, I'm going to do the time, get it over with, and get it behind me. And I did. I accepted it. I actually couldn't get a job after I had gotten indicted, after I had lost everything in Mississippi. Nobody would give me a job, not even at a grocery store. And so I decided that I was going to just move, you know, take me a trip. So I came to Georgia in 2013 with the hopes of trying to get a new life, get a new beginning, to start over somewhere away from my family who were, you know, well-known street people, drug dealers, you name it, you know. So I didn't want to have to be the person to say I don't have any other choice but to turn to this, you know, because so many of my family members, that's, you know, that's what happens, you know. Well, I ain't going to sit here and be hungry. I'm not going to sit here and be broke, you know, so I'll do what I got to do. But I had a mindset that I wanted God to exalt me. I didn't want to do it with my hands. I didn't want to even put my hands in it. And if he brought me to it, he would bring me through it. And I did not understand him being a mighty God, but still allowing me to go to prison, you know. And I had to understand that it was my own, you know, this is the way that he had to get me still. And in, I thought in my mind that I had lost everything, but actually that was the beginning of everything new. I was here in Georgia, had just got me a job. I had started working and talking with some people over in Cobb County, district attorney, the county solicitor, you know, kind of telling them my story, telling them what I wanted to do. And I wanted to get a new life if I could just get some help with getting a job and get housing. And right at the point that my children and I, it was just me and my two younger children here doing good. I dropped my kids off at school, and on my way home, I got stopped by a police. And when he ran my license, he said that they had a active warrant for me from Mississippi for MDOC. So I had already been sentenced on paper, but I did not know, never been in trouble. I did not know that I couldn't come to Georgia without getting permission. And so actually what happened, I got violated. So when I go back in front of this judge on this violation, I explain to him, I came here, I showed him the paperwork. Even the district attorney for Cobb County had written a letter, you know, stating that, you know, they were helping me here. If they would just transfer my file here, that they would make sure, you know, that I reported, whatever, whatever. He wasn't hearing that. You know, he was like, if I could give you 10 years, I would give, you know, I would give you them 10, you know. But I was like, well, you know, he was talking to me so rough and, you know, made me feel, he wanted to make me feel so small. But even then, standing in front of him after they extradited me back to Mississippi, I wasn't going to hold I wasn't going to fold. You know, they wouldn't let me talk to anybody. I had to, the one phone call I got, I had to make sure that someone picked my children up from school over at East Cobb. And that was the last time I had seen my children. 2013, I laid eyes back on my kids in 2015. I have not lived with my children since then. Like I said, when
so
I got out.
So what was during your time, Kimberly?
They were with my ex-husband's family. Yeah, they were with my ex-husband's family. You know, of course, you know, poisoning them. You know, your mom, she ain't no good. She's not going to come back and get y'all. You know, it's over for her. She might as well get her a regular job. She'll never have a business again. You know, Miss Bougie, high and mighty. You know, after all the things you know, that you had done in the communities and churches, buying vans for churches. I mean, it was just, it just opened my eyes to see us, you know, what we need to do more as far as each other versus tearing each other down. And once I did get to prison, I actually was able to see what my calling was. You know, I had other children, other people's children. That I had to pray over, that I had to write letters to the commissioner for, that had been there too long and, you know, they just overlooking them. And, you know, I had to write to the Board of Health about the our personal living as women, our personal hygiene, you know, not getting the things that we need to you know, be clean and you know, comfortable and, you know, it not be living inhumane because there was so much of that going on. And so I started working for the chaplain And the superintendent of the prison, he came to me. He said something different about you. I was like, I don't know. I mean, I've heard it a million times. So at this point, I had no hope, you know, in myself. People constantly saying you're smart, you know, you're inquisitive. You can you do this for me? I could always, at the drop of a dime, it didn't matter what you needed, how you needed, if you needed me to write a paper, if you needed me to write a proposal, if you needed me to do the research for a business that you're thinking about opening or you're thinking about, I would always be the come-to person. But I felt that I didn't have anybody. By this time, my adopted parents were dead. My dad's locked up. My brothers got killed. The one that I was so close to, he got killed when I was in prison. So I never got a chance to even say goodbye. The last time I talked to him on the prison phone, he told me that he would always be there for me. He was the one looking, you know, making sure my kids were provided for, you know, as far as, you know, if they needed anything, you know, he made sure that they had it. But it was just it was meant to be a killer. But it only made me stronger. You know, I decided to go against all odds, and that's the second book that I've written. My first book is Crowned by My Father, and that's the book that'll be released April 9th that I was telling you about, and the second book is Against All Odds. And I went in, I forgot about myself. I started being of service to everyone else in prison. Every time the church doors open or a Bible study class open, I was there. Got my 12-step Christian alcohol and drug training certificate. I didn't understand the judge sentencing me to go no alcohol and drug class. You know, I wasn't selling drugs. I didn't have drugs in my system. You know, he just wanted to try to give me more time. But I had sense enough to write the commissioner when I first got there, and I told him the situation. And you're supposed to be in a yellow jumpsuit for 2 months, and it takes you 6 months to get in class. When I wrote the letter, baby, I was in there maybe 2 weeks, and I was already in school. So I actually ended up staying in prison 10 months versus the time that I was supposed to be there. But I'm just glad. I wouldn't take anything back, you know, getting out of prison. I had to go to my biological mother's, and she, like I said, she had lung cancer. And she was just so mean. I mean, I could not believe some of the things that I had to see and go through. I didn't understand it then, but I truly understand it now. So now the mission is to be able to help the people 8 to 10 weeks before they get out, providing them with a transitional home to come out to for a year, to put them in a program to help them mentally, to help them overcome their past, to inspire, you know, to inspire their spirits, and to help them into their destiny. So I've worked on the program. I worked on the program the whole time I was in prison. I got out. I had a few obstacles to overcome, and I went on a fast. And the Lord showed me, He said, I need you to move to a foreign place. Somewhere you don't have any family, no friends. I just need you to be. I'm like, okay, God, I don't have no money. I don't have anything. I got maybe 4 pair of underwear, maybe 3 outfits, and no money at all. And you telling me to move to a foreign place. Okay. All right. So 2 or 3 days went by, and my pastor came to me. He said, well, I'll get you a round-trip ticket. Anywhere, give you a chance to go and get a start. I said, no, just get me a one-way ticket because I'm not coming back. And I got on that train. I came to Atlanta, got off at the train station, didn't know where I was going to go, but I was stepping out on faith, and I knew that God said that He would put people in my path, and I didn't have to worry about it. All I needed to do was just trust Him, and He would constantly remind me. He said, well, you say you miss big, and big to me means believe in God, and my motto is blessing individuals gratefully, still big. And everything that I've ever set to do, I always did it big. You know, normal people build a 3-bedroom, 2-bath home, but I carried a scrapbook for 7 years with a 10-bedroom home with marble floors, and I crafted it out myself. I did all the detailings. I paid attention to the crown molding, how to stack the crown molding to make it be exquisite without paying all the detail price to contractors. I got my license so I wouldn't have to pay a contractor. I could do it myself. I always liked extravagant things. And But now, like I said, the mission is to help people become successful coming out of prison, but I want to be able to help them spiritually, mentally, first, with providing them with a shelter, a place to live, providing them with the counseling spiritually, because truly becoming self-sufficient again and coming out into society with all the no's, with all the discouragement, with all the distractions, is only one or two things if you're not built up in your soul and in your spirit and in your mind. The system is set up for you to fail. The system is set up for you to go back, you know.
It is,
because when you get out, you know, how are you going to tell me to pay a PO if I can't get a job? You know, how are you going to tell me I got to pay restitution and I feel like it's double jeopardy? If you're going to give me restitution, why are you putting me in prison? You're going to make me pay and go to prison? You know,
right?
A lot of things I didn't understand.
What's set up originally, though?
So I became an advocate, you know. I became an advocate, and I started petitioning courts. I started speaking with judges and sharing my ideas. And so I prayed about it, and I said, okay, God, I've been out here. I've been homeless in Georgia. You know, I've been from one place to the other. I've been to shelters. I've had people to take me in. In a few days, they want me out. You know, so, you know, it was just like the bag lady, you know, I felt like I'm dragging my bags, but every day I got up, I put my makeup on, I would volunteer at shelters, or I would beat the streets and I would record myself going to different agencies asking for help, going to McDonald's, Popeyes, asking for jobs where they say, no, you're overqualified. I'm like, okay, I just need a job. No, ma'am.
Yeah.
But That sweet spirit came to me and said, but you asked me for that list. Where's that list that you asked me for? The things that you asked me for, that's what I'm preparing you for. And I didn't understand it. I'm like, but I don't have no money. He said, but haven't I provided for you the whole time you've been here? You haven't missed a meal. And if you did miss a meal, you didn't die. You know, you're not in the streets. You know, you're not at the park. You're not behind a bridge, you know, even if you're having to sleep on the floor, even if you're having to wash that four pair of underwear that now they're almost just strings, you know what I'm saying? And but dealing with what I had and not letting what I could see with my carnal mind distract me from being the person, being a kingdom builder, sharing the good news, going against all odds, because it wasn't about me. It was about the people that were still locked up and but needed to be free. And it was for the people who were free but still locked up in their brain, you know. So I set out to reach out to people, and I met so many people who's been to prison. I met many people who's come out and killed themselves because they didn't want to go back to prison and they couldn't make it out here, you know. And I explained to the governor, it is so stressful. You don't understand, you know. How could you understand? You never been here. You never had anybody to go through what we've gone through. You know, you'd rather pay the money to keep me in prison or keep me in jail, but you don't want to pay the money to rehab me. Okay, I understand that y'all think that prison is supposed to be a rehab. It's more drugs in the prison. It's more killing in the prison. It's more gang. I had to get back in a gang when I got to prison.
Yeah.
I had to go back to the gang just to be able to save face, just to be safe, just to keep from being raped, just to keep from, you know, different things. If they say, well, hey, you know, she's a part of that gang over there and, you know, ain't nobody going to bother her, you know. But I had to do those things, you know, and to endure.
Right.
I had to be the bigger person, to step up to a person and be like, look, leave her alone. You know, I was the one to get the whole zone back into praying every night before we would go to bed. At 10 o'clock, we would do a group prayer over the whole zone. You know, I would lead in prayer. I would lead in prayer service. You know, when people wanted to talk or needed help or direct prayer, one-on-one, I was the person that they came to. And I didn't understand, God, you know, here it is, I've lost. I felt like I had lost it all. But in all actuality, he was preparing me for greater. You know, I thought, you know, I never doubted that I could get out, you know, and get a business back. I never doubted that. But to see him manifest everything that I wrote on that bucket list in prison till this day, it's amazing. And it makes me, it sets me on fire, you know, to be out in the community. People's like, oh, you're a beautiful woman. You're not going to get remarried. I haven't thought about a relationship because I had to get myself together. You know, I had to allow God to do a work in me before I could even think about a relationship. You know, I had to be out there on foot making sure if it was just one person that I could touch. When I'm on the Martyr, you know, a young lady gets on the bus, and I was not going to get on the train that day. She get on the train with her three kids. She's screaming and hollering. I was like, look, your children are a blessing. You know, you have a choice. You know, you have them. They're here now. So what are you going to do with the here and now? You know, we can't worry about the mistakes that's already happened, but what can I do to help you, to influence you to go back to school? What can I do to get you the help that you need to get the kids in daycare? Just tell me.
Yeah.
Here's my number. Okay. I would take on these kind of projects just to stay busy, just to keep myself knowing that I'm helping somebody, just to see that God's will for my life will be done. And so now, you know, everything has evolved. I've gotten so many network partnerships, and actually to see some things being manifested, The Pain was my platform. And I have a blog now, From Prison to Purpose. And you guys can check out my page. It's on Facebook, From Prison to Purpose, and join in, climbing in. If you have family members who's in prison or getting them ready to be released within the next year, I would like the name, address. I would like to submit information to them. I would like to send them a book, you know, or some information about the program, because we think that we're okay. The enemy wants us to think that we're okay and we all cracked up and all messed up, still holding on to the past and haven't got over the last hurdle or the last hump. You know, we have to become spiritually free, and we have to let go and allow God to put us back together again, you know.
Right.
And so when I got to the point that I knew who I was, it was no limits, you know. I didn't stop at just little things. I didn't care if I had that one pair of shoes, Miss Sandy. Every day I'm going to get up and I'm going to walk them shoes. I'm going to do what I got to do. People calling me as if I was already their counselor. People calling me, Miss Kim, I'm homeless. I don't have nowhere to go. I'm running into mothers with children in cars in the park. And they saying, well, hey, my husband just beat on me and he's using drugs and I don't want to take my kids. Here it is. I stopped what I'm doing. I might have $20. I'm saying, here, get you some gas and get the kids something to eat. But let me call and speak to somebody over here at this shelter. And they're like, well, who does she think she is to be calling on somebody's behalf? I am who he said I am. And he said, you plant the seed and I'll make it grow. So that's what I do.
Yep.
You know, I trust God all the way to do the work. It's not for me. It's for me to just be accountable, being a chosen vessel. And he does everything else. And I'm just so elated with the new partnerships and the new business. I just spoke with a guy from Miami where we're going to be going to a whole nother level. Starting to speak and doing some other things in other states. I'm going to do transitional houses in other states, go out there and offer the program. And just,
Kimberly,
I'm just going with it.
Kimberly, I want to stop you just for a moment because of break. And from people that wanted to talk to you about your program and to see where you were in that process, to either suggest a person to you between you and people that they know. So we're going to take a short break. And if you're on the line or if you have a question that you would like to ask, make sure that you push one on the dial so that I will recognize you and open up your line so that you can speak. Again, this is Kimberly Big, homeless yet helping others. So, and then we'll come back and we'll open it up for comments and questions from the audience. We'll be back.
Well, I see you.
Lost touch with my soul. I
had nowhere to turn. I had nowhere to go. Lost sight of my dream. Thought it would be the end of me. I thought I'd never make it through. I had no hope to hold on to. I thought I would break. I didn't know my own strength. And I crashed down and I tumbled, but I did not crumble. I got through all the pain. I didn't know my own strength. Survived my darkest hour. My faith kept me alive. I picked myself back up, hold my head up high. I was not built to break. I didn't know my own. In my heart, I found the light to light my way out of the dark. Found all that I need here inside of me. Oh, I thought I'd never find my way. I thought I'd never live that way.
She was looking through the windows at Kimberly Biggs when she made that song, I Felt on the Street. So reflective of Kimberly's life and the things that she's been through and the questions that she had about her own self. So, Love and Wellness, we have with us tonight Kimberly Biggs, who is the owner and the founder of Big Empowerment Group, and Big stands for Blessing and the Gratefully. She's been sharing with us a story of such grand magnitude and such a testimony of overcoming all of her life from childhood, having a child, bringing her first child on her 15th birthday, to being abused in a marriage and in her early years, and being top of the mountain and that slide down the hill from people not really appreciating who she was and thought she was too much. She was too big, you know, was bougie, the term would be that she said. Own good. So Kimberly has really provided us with such a colorful background and her life. And we apply it ourselves to our own lives and how we can make a difference if we would only but do it. So she's not let anything stop her from having her children or having bogus warrants put out on her to be arrested and just a number of things. But she's talking now about the side of that. And service to humanity from the lessons that she's learned in life. And so she didn't take it as what she did initially, and she decided to look because she didn't accept that she was defeated and that God was, mad at her, quote unquote, but that she realized that the things that she had come to serve and who she was to serve, because it's always better when you have experience versus coming out, coming to people, things you studied. And Kimberly, I definitely understand that preparation period that you've gone through, and it probably was not always very well.
Just perseverance, just knowing, my adopted mother took us to church a lot, and I can remember having the Bible drill where we had to learn, they'd call out a scripture and we had to hold our Bibles up in the air and then, be the first one to answer it, get a candy bar, a gift card, just so on. But those scriptures that I learned way back then were the ones that helped me to endure and persevere through, to be able to hear, the Holy Spirit talk to me through this ordeal and actually build me up. And I didn't have to go out and put a banner on or a tag or a label on myself to say, I'm this, or I'm that. Some people go and they come out preachers, or they call themselves preachers or ministers or this, that, and the third. I just knew that I was a kingdom builder, and that's what I would say. I know that I was called, I know that I was chosen, but I wasn't going to be out saying, okay, this, that, and the third, because I knew I was a work in progress. If you step wrong, I trusted God, but if you came at me wrong, I had to learn how to keep my mouth closed versus lashing out and wanting to punch on somebody, because that's where I came from, and then, I was like, zero tolerance, but I learned how to turn that energy into more powerful, more authoritative measures, learning how to just keep my mouth closed and look at a person and then at the end of the day say, okay, God, I'm proud of myself because I actually accomplished something, within my inner being that's going to even enhance me more in the kingdom, being able to listen, being able to see, and being still so that you can learn how to, to pay attention to signs and wonders.
Right, right. Because it's always right there in front of you. Sometimes it comes cleverly disguised as something that you wouldn't even recommend a blueprint for your next step that you're supposed to take. So you're very true with that. So your work is about getting all that you've gotten, those varied experiences that you've had, to be able to go back and provide best advocacy for those individuals. You were starting to tell us about your transition. You're also talking about some other programs that you were initiating. You want to finish telling us about those?
Yeah. I ended up getting a 12-step Christian alcohol and drug certificate where I'm able to teach the 12 steps through a Christian perspective, strictly through Bible scripture. So I do group sessions for people that may, have individuals that come out through churches or through groups of people that they know maybe be in a community that are alcoholics or drug addicts or agencies that, you know, have programs there that they would allow people to come in and do coaching or mentorship programs, and do a self-sufficiency program. I also do a budget and life skill training program that will teach you, you know, how to keep your finances in line, teach you how to get yourself back. And the most profound thing is being able to help leaders, help other people be leaders that come out, help them to become entrepreneurs, give them entrepreneurship skills, give them entrepreneurship training, and helping them to find their why, find their purpose, and not only just get out and be looking forward to just be working on somebody else's job, but to find what that niche is or find what that grip is that could cause you to be more successful, more profound, and more derivative towards your destiny. And so I'm just so excited to be a positive aspect in a community. I was out eating yesterday, and a young guy that was my waiter came up to me, and he was like, you know, telling me he had just graduated from West Georgia, you know, in business. I was like, I'm proud of you, son. That's great. And I have such a huge heart. And I knew that I was supposed to be there at that point in time to meet this little boy, this guy. And he got to talking about he wanted to get into real estate. I told him I'm a real estate investor. You know, he wanted to know the concepts of it. And I passed him a card. And I like to do things like that to see how aggressive or how serious or how passionate a person is. I gave him the card. I said, my email address is on there. Shoot me an email and let me know that you're interested, and give me a time that we can kind of do a consultation call, and I can see how I can help. If I can't help, I'll direct you to my mentors that taught me wholesaling and investing since I've been here in Georgia back in 2013. And he did. He called. And I was like, okay, God, I see you. But being able to share information with people, help build people, help them to accomplish their goals, help them to actually set goals, small goals until, you know, medium goals, until your large-term goals, until they fold into something, helping them get the credit in line. You know, you got to have, you know, your credit stable and in line to do, you know, to be prosperous. You know, if you have debts, teach them how to pay their debts off, you know, and not carry them on into the next lifetime. You know, those type of things. I'm just so passionate about, you know, getting more opportunities to get in our communities, to teach seminars, teach workshops, and help build us up as a people, as a whole people, where we're more profound out here in society.
Those classes that you're offering are accepted. How what's the time frame that you do these? You know, is it upon a person have 6 months before they're going to be released, or is it 90 days, 1 year?
Well, the program itself, in house for the people who will be in the transitional homes, those are mandatory programs. Whether they use drugs or not, they have to go through the 12-step program. So it'll teach them preventive measures, teach them how to deal with other people who are drug users, you know, budget and life skill training, because I know what it is. I don't want anybody to come out and think, hey, I can hit the ground running. That's the wrong idea. That's the wrong picture to paint in your head, you know. You're going to have some adversities, you know, you might as well get ready for it. You know, people are not going to be nice. You might as well prepare yourself for it. But helping them mentally know that, you know, it's not about that person, because if that person haven't walked a day in your shoes, it doesn't matter to me what you think, because
right.
I truly know that some people that have everything to say, if they had to walk 1 minute in my shoes, they would have died already. You know, they've
exactly.
already been gone. So, you know,
yeah.
it doesn't matter, but to build somebody up, you know, my whole goal, it takes more than 8 minutes. You know, I tell people will love to give you 8 minutes. Oh, sugar, I'll pray for you. But, I mean, come on. If you could throw out with your mouth that you will pray, you know, I know I read in my word, he said, you see a need, you know, meet it. You know, and we have to do more than just say a prayer. Sometimes we, you know, well, you know, it's not my problem. People quick to say, well, ain't my problem. She had the same opportunity I had. She made, but sometimes, you know, opportunities come before you just to see who you are, you know.
Exactly.
And so
exactly.
I try to teach people not to get so caught up in what the next person doesn't do, because if that was the case, Miss Sandy, I wouldn't be here. You know, if I was going to worry about the seeds that I've sown, I just was willing. I wanted to see God's glory. I wanted him to make those seeds grow that I had planted all those years ago. You know, and I have kids. I have women and men calling me from way back down there talking about, hey, we appreciate, you know, what you did. We appreciate you getting out here, enrolling people up in NAACP, you know, having rallies, getting people signed up to register to vote. You know, I would always keep myself busy, and that's just my desired goal, is to get back into the communities, having some workshops, having some entrepreneurial skill found programs for our youth this summer, asking them, what do you want to be? Don't just ask them what they want to be, but give them the tools that they need to achieve those goals. Start now, you know, planting seeds and start watering it for the rest of their lives until they get to a point that they can actually be successful. So these are the type of things that, you know, I want to see. I want to see people come out of prison and be reformed. I want to see them come out and have their own businesses, such as me. I want to see them be able to say, well, hey, it took me a year after I got out, you know, to get it together, but I made it, you know. So I put together a program that I'm going to do in October, latter part of October, and people can just check my page to find out more about it. But we're going to be recognizing some people, you know. We're going to be recognizing some people in the community that has actually helped us, you know, to make the steps and to grow and to be self-sufficient again.
Okay. So there doesn't seem to be any part of the community that you're not positively impacting. What I want you to do is to tell us, what is it that we as the audience or as community members, what is it that you want or could use us in the And then also, if you could give the audience contact information, how people can follow you or get in contact with you. And again, like I said, what is it that you are require from people to support you?
Well, it's just that you be genuinely sincere, and not only that you sympathize with a person, but empathize with a person, you know. Just going an extra mile, you know, and you know, people think that people are always looking for something monetary, but I'm not looking for anybody to sponsor any money or anything into my program, because I trust God for everything, and he's done so much, you know. He hasn't, I mean, it ain't no stone unturned, you know. I got people calling me, you know, making donations, wanting to be a part of my program from state to state, but it's just us here, you know, being more active in each other's lives, in helping our children to grow, helping the people that's coming out, you know, in our church families, in our homes, in our communities, giving them some type of direction, you know, if they need help or before they get home and need help, you know, contact me. Again, on Facebook, you can go from prison to purpose and you can find me there, you know. You can send me messages. I'm getting ready to do a live blog. My live blog will be aired starting March 1st, and there's going to be actually live interviews such as this, but it'll be visual interviews with me and other people who have come out and who are successful and doing positive and great things in our communities. But the main thing is, you know, volunteering some time or even just showing up or allowing us an opportunity to come into your church homes, into your communities, and being able to share and help counsel or mentor and coach, you know, people that's in prison or people who's incarcerated or going through jail, or even young people who are trying to be in gangs. You know, I've talked to the kids about being in gangs or the thoughts that they think that they get from being in gangs and bullying, you know, because I lived it, you know. I lived it. I was in a gang. I had the power. I had the authority. I called the shots, you know. And but turning that energy into something more powerful for the kingdom, and it's all about kingdom to me, because I asked the Lord if he would give me a second chance and if he would exalt me. I wouldn't do anything. I mean, I laid flat for 7 years. I mean, literally, when I got out here in Georgia last February, I could keep $5 for a whole month, you know, because I didn't have anything. You know, I had to know how to make it work. So, you know, teaching us to save a Coke, don't buy a Coke for one day for a whole month. The money that you would have bought a Coke, save that money, put it into an account and watch it grow, you know, all the frivolous spending, you know, teaching our youth, you know, how to envision or how to have a vision, teaching them how to set goals and teaching them how to work towards those goals, open up a kids college where kids can, you know, shadow people, you know, such as doctors, lawyers, veterinarians, just whatever, you know, just being community minded and pulling together and making and seeing it all come together, doing the work, you know, working the vineyard. You know, we say all the time, you know, what we want to do, but, you know, we ain't getting out here we're not doing the labor, you know. So it's one thing to be saved, but if you don't know the gospel, if you're not living the gospel, it's a different thing. You know, if you're not getting out there and implementing what he says for us to do, and it's just in vain to me, you know. And I just thank God for choosing me. I thank God for keeping me through even the depression times, you know, when I was depressed and I almost lost my mind, you know, having to learn how to speak again, or, you know, it was just so much. But I'm here.
Right.
And God, yeah. And God is truly, truly, truly almighty, you know, because I had to know that it wasn't even about me, because if it was about me, when I attempted suicide, I would have succeeded. But God said, no, no matter what I tried to do, what I tried to give up on, he didn't take his hands off me. I took my hands off him, but he never took his hands off me, you know. And I'm here today. I'm a living witness. I'm working. I'm grinding. And I'm tilling the soil. I'm being effective. You know, I'm teaching and coaching and wholesaling and real estate investing. I'm doing opening new businesses. Wherever I do real estate, I do empowerment ministry. I also do consulting, and that's just not here in Atlanta. I'm working on some other states as well to be coming real soon. So, but being able to pull together, you know, and getting out there and making the impacts in our community, I think that's going to be the most powerful thing that we as a people can do, because I can remember back in the day, if my neighbor needed some sugar, you know, she could come over and say, hey, can I get a cup of sugar? You know, these days and times, you know, people will be like, baby, they sitting there looking at you knock at the door, but they're not willing to open the door because they don't want to be bothered with you, or they don't want to, you know, we gotta get away from that mindset that we gotta give people, because if people are acting out a certain way, it's something going on inside. And we should emphasize and, you know, sympathize with people, to try to give them more than 8 minutes, asking, you know, show a kind gesture, you know, what can I do or how can I help? You know, what, I mean, I had a little boy in the community the other day, and he said he was selling candy bars. I don't know if he was selling them for himself or for school. It didn't matter. But the Holy Spirit instructed me to get a boy $20, give him the $20. I was like, man, I don't got but $60, you know, and it's like, give him $20, you know, and I'm trying to get change for that $20 to just give him $5. He's like, I'll give you $5 candy. I don't want the candy. Here's the $5. And the Holy Spirit's like, get a boy $20. So I gave him the $20. But after I gave that child that $20, so many things have come. Million-dollar projects have come abroad and come to my lap. Just being obedient.
Yeah.
And just being able to give back to the community. People say, well, it ain't your community. You need to go back to. No, this is where. This is my community. You know, I ask God for new beginning, new direction, new friends, new relationship, just everything new. And this is it. You know, this is where I am.
Yeah, the world
and
is
this
my
is
community
I do.
Now, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, because, you know, like, I love your message. I love your message wanting us to be as active or taking an active role in our communities, not necessarily, so, you know, helping you to do anything, but to volunteer in our own community. And I know at this one church that I have attended since I've been here in Atlanta, Hillside, they have an incredible prison. And that ministry was so powerful. doing the same type of work that you're talking about, you know, doing as far as going out and, you know, being and establishing contact while they were in, and, you know, just very successful. We held prison ministry community workshop, you know, so that people could understand. But a lot of times when they get home, it's, you know, they have an issue with their family and trying to, you know, work with them within their family structure, too. So we have a caller, 843-250. Give us your name and where you're calling from and your comments, please.
Hi, Sandra. This is Havana. I'm calling from Newborn, Georgia.
Hey,
how are you?
Great. How are you
and
doing?
Sister Kimberly, how are you? You are such a powerful, inspiring sister. I really enjoy hearing your story. You're amazing. You are definitely an amazing person, and I really appreciate you sharing, and you are so inspiring.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I can't take any of the credit, you know, but I appreciate you for listening. I appreciate you for tuning in. But, you know, all glory goes to God, because it wasn't that I chose. He chose me. And I had to understand who I was, sister, even in the hardships. I knew something different was about me. Even when I got the charge, you know, when I got the indictment, it was like, even when they cuffed me to bring me back to Mississippi, like the Holy Spirit was like, wherever you go, there I'll be also, you know. So it was like I couldn't fret, you know, I couldn't be weary, you know, I couldn't worry about if my kids would be okay or if I would be okay. I had to just say, okay, God, I said that if you would go with me on this journey, that I would submit myself to you and be a kingdom powerful vessel out here in the kingdom. And that's just what I, you know, what I do. You know, I forget about myself, you know, and I stay so dove into my work, you know, getting my paperwork together while everybody else was out partying and having fun and enjoying life, shopping, whatever, whatever. I never got envious. I never got jealous. I said, you know what, God, prepare me for my greater, because it will come. It's in due season. I can't bless your people if I'm in poverty. I can't open my door to a woman and children if I don't have anywhere to lay my own head, because I'll take them straight off the street and bring them to my house and buy an air mattress and put them on the bed, you feel me, and feed them and never make them feel uncomfortable, never tiptoe. They will never have to tiptoe around me, or if they flushing the toilet too much or turning on too many lights, because I know what it feels like to be there, you know, and be uncomfortable in a place, you know. But God is all I can say, sister, and I appreciate you for tuning in tonight.
You're welcome. I'm meeting so many positive sisters. It's like this year I'm running into so many positive sisters, and even in the movies. And I said, wow, we are such powerful instruments. And we most of us don't know our purpose, and we're learning our purpose just by tuning in and listening and watching and seeing others. So you really helped me to define who I am as well.
Well, God bless you. Thank God. Thank God for it. And if there's anything that I can do, sister, again, I'm on Facebook, From Prison to Purpose. You can find me on that page, From Prison to Purpose. You can also catch me on Instagram, Kimberly Biggs. I also have a site on Instagram. And, again, I'm getting ready to do that blog site, and I would love for you to sign up on my Prison to Purpose page, send me a friend request, so that you can kind of be a part of everything that I have going on. You can sign on. I'm going to be having a couple of events, not just for prison ministry, but for ministering in the community. If there's anything that I might can be able to help you do, any information that you may need, that you need some help with resources, just feel free to contact me or some people on my team.
Absolutely. I definitely will keep it in mind. And look, I'm going to be waiting for that movie to come out, because I see movies. I know, but there's so much information. I'm just waiting for it to come out.
Oh yeah, it's in the making. I'm actually supposed to start. I'm supposed to start making some moves on that documentary in a few months. So
great,
ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, well, we're down to our 2-minute mark, Kimberly, and I knew it was going to be difficult to get everything in 90 minutes because you're such a power. But I so thank you for sharing such a vivid recollection and sharing your testimony with us and, like, having us say, you know, to inspiration. And knowing and discovering what our purpose can be in this lifetime. So you said we can be in contact with you from Prison to Purpose on Facebook and then on Instagram.
It's from Kimberly Biggs
from
with two G's, and it's also from Against All Odds from Prison to Purpose on Instagram. You could just put in Kimberly Biggs, it'll pop up. Email address is Big Empowerment Group. I have a website, Big Empowerment Group, as well. And if there's anything anyone needs in the community, if anyone need me for any type of volunteering or any workshop, seminar, mentorship program for the children, I'm willing and I'm available. If I'm not available, I'll do all I can to make myself available. Either myself or someone from the team will surely be there, and we'll make that happen.
Thank
you
very much.
Could you spell your last name for me, Kimberly?
It's Biggs.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And thank you for listening and Life of and Wellness of Sandy Rogers Show. We're out of time, but as always, talk candidly about positive experiences and personal development here. And when we love ourselves, we bring to anyone, especially ourselves, and we are at peace and harmony with all of humanity. So until next Tuesday, same time, we'll see you then. Be blessed. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night. Good night. Good night.